This is a recording of Dr. Tom Rozell for Sunday, April 23rd, 2017. You can listen to this program live every Sunday afternoon from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed on this program are not the views of 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozell Live by Dr. Tom Rozell, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Dr. Tom Rozell Live, right now. On 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. This is Dr. Tom Rozell Live in studio, waiting to take your calls on just about anything you'd like to talk about, as long as it's about your health. And you've tried, you've applied, you've done all kinds of things to make a difference, and you've come up with the same thing. You lost. It's not working the way you're supposed to. Call 888-630-9625. Love to take your calls today. You know, we're in that spring transition. What happened to the warm weather? It got cold today, but the skies at least are nice and crisp and blue and, you know, threatening again. But nevertheless, we're good. You know, I decided to invite my boss into the program today. And, you know, so you have to be very careful when you invite Sue to do something. Because, you know, he said, what do you want to talk about? And she said, let's talk about fat. And I said, fat? And I said, is there something here that you're looking at that I'm not aware of? You know, and, you know, my brain says I'm 20 pounds lighter than I was when I was in college. And Sue, was there a message there?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Ah, okay. So I just need to get it cleared.
It wasn't just fat.
Well, I had to clear it up on public.
Okay.
You know, so. No, but we're talking about eating patterns and things that make you fat and why you're getting sick and why your brain won't shut off. I want more of that chocolate stuff or that fat stuff or that sweet stuff or that salty stuff. And it's contributing to your overall demise. And we are a country that is out of control. You know, we were talking on the way up and about people being fat and obese and sick because of, you know, the types of foods that they're eating. And I went back to a statement that I had made quite some time ago. And I said, you know, we don't have to worry about going to war with anybody, with our military. All we have to do is export our fast foods.
Yeah, that's true.
And now they're becoming as fat as we are.
And they're even doing studies on it. In fact, I was just reading an article by the woman who's head of the World Health Organization. And she's saying that our fast foods are making formerly skinny nations, they're getting to be fat and obese and diabetic just like we are.
It's not a good thing. I mean, the rate of fat in this country has exponentially exploded over the last 20 years. And it continues to get worse. You know, there was a time when, you know, you'd looked at least children and, you know, you had a little plump kid here and there occasionally, but it was not the general mode. Now we're seeing kids from the time of, you know, under a year old all the way through, and they never get out of that baby fat. Mm-mm. That baby fat continues to grow exponentially and causes all kinds of problems. But we're not just talking about kids. We're talking about adults. We're talking about, and there's a lot of different reasons why this occurs. So you know,
One of the things she said was, as of 2014, they estimate more than 640 million people worldwide are now severely obese.
640 million.
That's a half a billion people.
Yeah, a little more than that.
And that's including countries where people are starving as well.
So, you know, you look at America, you walk down the street, and I dare you to find that there's not at least half of the people that you look at that are a little on the broad side, right?
I had a client last week, as a matter of fact, we were talking about this, and he said that he was looking at an old video of a rock concert that they were showing on TV back in the early 70s. And he says, as they were flashing through the audience, he said, you didn't see one heavy person. They were all slender. And that was just in the 70s.
I know. You know, that was our genre.
Yeah.
Don't say that. Okay. So that's true, though. I mean, people were not as heavy. But we walked and we ran. You know, I came from a small community of 52,000 people, and we didn't have cars. And, you know, I came from a very ethnic community, my little Italian Borio that I grew up in, you know, with the pastas and the pizzas and the breads and so forth. And so. But even still, we didn't get fat. We were out all the time. We were moving. Grandma got fat. You know, people that were home all day long baking.
Munching and baking.
Munching and baking. Mm-hmm. But if you had to categorize our fat population, how would you break it down? Why? Seriously, why are we getting, you know, this,
well,
this overload syndrome?
I really think a lot of it has to do with our political structure of our agriculture and our manufacturing. I mean, I can remember when the first McDonald's came to our area, and there was only one. Now there's a McDonald's in every corner. I could remember that the only thing you could buy at a gas station might be a Hershey bar. Now you can get a full lunch. Or dinner, or breakfast.
And it ain't good stuff.
And it's not good stuff, no. I don't remember ever having so many different deliverable pizza places. And, you know, just the content of the lunches in schools. I mean, when ketchup is considered a vegetable, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's really unbelievable.
Maybe they've changed since I remember
no.
that being the statement.
No,
but,
no, it's a tomato.
So you've got... among other things. So, I mean, you've got a whole shift in the paradigm of what people consider to be food. People didn't go out to eat every meal either, you know, back in the 70s. They couldn't afford to, and they didn't have reasonably cost foods that they could drive in, grab something, and run with.
Well, you know, that's the statement of the day. I'm going to go grab something.
I'm going to go grab something. Well, something's grabbing us back.
Yeah, it might be a bag of chips. It might be a soda, so forth. Then we're going to get into that. We can get the NutraSweets and the artificial sweeteners and so forth, which is like, really? You know, do you know, I have patients, and as well as you do, that come in and said, you know, they're diabetic, and their doctor says, yeah, you can drink your soda as long as it's diet soda.
Yeah.
And they still have blood sugar handling problems.
Sure they do.
And we're, you know, we talked about diabetes being exponentially on the rise. Forget about fat butt. You know, it's over the top. And we have kids, you know, type 2 diabetes used to be adult onset diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got children under the age of 10.
And that goes back to when it was in the 90s that we started seeing this trend. Back in the 90s. So now we're coming up almost 20 years into that.
So we got lifestyle, but we also have genetic pass-through.
We do. We do.
We have predispositions to, you know, chunkadora.
Well, and one of the things that we've talked about in conferences and things like that is the fact that our bodies are still hardwired to eat real things from Mother Nature. That's the way we were developed. That's how we evolved on this planet. And for, what, 200,000 years, we've survived on that sort of fare and done well. But we didn't do it without us having a very sophisticated, you know, search and reward system that led us to remembering where food sources were in a period of time when things were very scarce. And we didn't really have a need for our bodies to say, okay, that's enough, quit eating. We always had plenty of warnings of saying, okay, you're on empty, you need to eat, you need to look for food at any place and grab it as soon as you can because you're at risk for starvation. But we didn't get the shutoff valve either. So now we're in a situation where there's food on every corner. You can't hear a radio program, watch a TV show, see a magazine, anything. It doesn't blast highly palatable, fattening foods. And so we still have that same reward center saying, okay, you need to find food at any corner, but there's no shutoff valve.
No, and the addictive process becomes chemical. It also becomes hardwired relative to training.
Absolutely.
And what we look for and so forth. You were reading an article today on the way to the radio station on something that Cheesecake Factory was coming up with, right?
Yes.
And we were sitting there, you know, people think, you know, a normal sedentary American shouldn't have more than about, in the neighborhood of about 2,000 calories a day divided up throughout the day. And
right.
Actually, if you're eating well, that's a lot of food.
Right.
You know, an athlete, maybe 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, but these are high-intense individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So you were reading this this new Cheesecake.
July 30th is National Cheesecake Day, and the Cheesecake Factory is debuting a new one called Chocolate Hazelnut Crunch Cheesecake.
You know how many people out there you go,
I know. And it's Nutella on a blonde brownie crust with a hazelnut crunch top. And it's only one serving is only a mere 1,400 calories. 1,400.
There's the diet for the day, one piece.
22 teaspoons of sugar. And that's just the dessert. They went on to say what you could add to it for dinner. And at the end of it, you're somewhere around 4,000 calories for one meal.
So you figure about 22 teaspoons of sugar.
22 teaspoons of sugar.
22.
Yes.
And we know that one teaspoon of sugar decreases the white blood cell capacity to fight infection and to protect you by 12% for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no wonder we're a society of sick people.
So we're going to go and have that cheesecake, and then we're going to go outside with the weather, cold air, hot sun, so we get sweaty, and then we cool off quickly, and then we get a nose blast of pollen, and gee, I wonder why everybody has sinus trouble.
888-630-9625.
I'm being bad today.
It's like, we're going to get into that. It's usually, that's my side of the table over here. I'm the guy that, you know, provokes everybody. Karen, how can we help you? Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Dr. Russell. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Oh, good. I was just wondering what you would recommend in supplements to take for allergies, for seasonal allergies.
Well, Karen, you're opening up a Pandora's box because there's no two cases that are the same.
Oh.
And when you're talking about seasonal allergies, you can either talk about different pollens, you can talk about mold degradation, all the garbage that's, you know, that's spewing out in the atmosphere. In the fall, you have a different type of pattern. The problem is the immune system's not working. And when your immune system is faltering, the symptoms that you're getting, the allergic reaction, the runny nose, the tiredness, that I don't feel good, your eyes are burning, even in some cases where the body hurts, is all dependent on which body you're talking about and which system is broke. So let me kind of just throw some stuff out there before I tell you what to take. And if you take a person who is suffering particularly from seasonal allergies, particularly in the spring, my brain goes to the place, why isn't the immune system working and why isn't it breaking down these spores and elements that are coming into the system? The first thing that you look at is the digestive function and the respiratory system. You need high levels of hydrochloric acid production as your first line of defense. That's your stomach acid, and also the mucous membranes of your throat have to have a certain flight, fight, defense pattern, starting with these little glands that sit underneath your jawbone called the parotid glands. And so you look at those things first. So you clean up the diet, you eliminate, you know, go to my mantra, sugar, sodas, coffee, black teas, fast food, fried foods, alcohol, gluten, additives, preservatives, GMO products, and so forth. You start with that, get into a diet that is tons of vegetables, a lot of lean proteins, nuts and seeds if you're not allergic to, except peanuts and peanut butter, because it's a rhizoid. It's actually a fungus. It's not a nut. It grows in the ground, not on a tree. And you have to make sure that, you know, that you have a proper balance and you're not putting things. Dairy products are one of the most inflammatory elements that you can. And if you're allergic to mold at all and you put dairy of any kind in your system, now eggs are not dairy, even though, you know, they market in the morning, you know, with breakfast. It's anything that comes from a cow, a goat, a sheep, you know, from the breast tissue of an animal. And you eliminate those things, that's where you start. What you can do is you can go get some, if you're not allergic to vinegars and so forth, go get Bragg's Organic Vinegar. It's an old naturopathic remedy. Take 2 teaspoons and a little bit of water on an empty stomach twice a day, and you're going to find that that will begin to help. High levels of vitamin C. I would take 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day. The only side effect with vitamin C, if you get too much, is a little bit of cramping and diarrhea, but in most people it's not an issue whatsoever. And take a really good probiotic. Now, without knowing your particular situation, it's difficult to go further than that. I hope that helps you a little bit, Karen. Appreciate your phone call. Thank you for calling. We're coming up to a break. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live. Sue Rozell, the boss, is here. Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live in studio, 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. That's how you find us here. And by the way, many of you have asked, you know, where can we find all these programs that you do all the time? Well, you can go to our website. You can go to RozellCare.com, and there's links there. Or you can go to RozellRadio.com, and you can find it there. So there's literally hundreds of programs available for you. Most of them are listed by title. Enjoy them. And by the way, if you ever want to hear a particular program, want us to do something, let us know. You know, send us a note, rosellecare.com, R-O-S-E-L-L-E-C-A-R-E.com, and say, hey, you know, I'm interested in this. Do you think you can fit it into the schedule? And we'll do everything we can. In studio, Sue Rozelle, we're talking about way too much eating going on.
Yeah.
And the wrong things. Way wrong things.
Thought it was fitting after the Easter basket bounty that we've all experienced.
Yes. Yes. You know, and I won't go into, you know, Easter was a blessed time.
And, yes, it was.
And I will not destroy by talking about things that, you know, make children feel unhappy, except they ate way too much crapola. Sue, let's talk about stress eating.
Okay. One of the things that is causing some of this problem with our weight is the amount of stress we have in our environment. We do not have a way to release it, and everybody is under stress. It's stressful to do anything anymore. One of the things that happens is it activates that craving, that desire for those highly palatable foods, because comfort foods reduce the stress. You don't hear about broccoli reducing your stress. But I can guarantee you French fries or a chocolate sundae will.
Yeah, they do. It's calmative. It's the, you know, the food that I have to have something to make me feel good. Now, how much of that, so my question is, how much of that is learned behavior? Because when you were a little kid and you did something really good, mama gave you something that was, was over the top. And how much of it is the brain saying, I want this stuff because it increases my serotonin. And I get calm quickly.
I think it's both. Okay. We know that stress gives you somewhat of a high. I mean, we all know stress junkies. You know, they're not happy unless they're constantly being push. And that opiate type feeling is something that suppresses the very weak measures that the brain sends out saying, okay, enough already. So you can override it really, really easy. And when you are eating all of these things that are so palatable, it does reduce your sensation of pain, both emotional as well as physical. So now we've got something that calms down the stress, makes you feel happy, takes down the pain, and it allows you to feel more comfortable, more stable. Plus, you've also had a learned response that if every time you did something that was approved by the adult in charge, you got a sweet treat.
You know, it's the same type of behavior response mechanism, but it likens also to people who are smokers.
Mm-hmm.
And when they grab a cigarette, you know, the cigarette is a calming pattern for them.
Sure.
But in many cases, the calming pattern is because as they take a drag on that cigarette, they're breathing deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And if they learn to breathe deeply, then they eliminate that one attraction to cigarettes. And, you know, I've always watched people who are addictive smokers. It's not that they let them, you know, burn out in their hand. They actually pull on that cigarette so deeply. It's like they're filling their lungs.
Sure.
So why don't you do it with air instead?
Well, because it's not going to quite do the same thing. All right. Whenever you're addicted to some substance and you are trying to withdraw from that addictive substance, sweets help with that withdrawal. I mean, what happens when people stop smoking? They gain copious amounts of weight. They've got candy in their mouth. They've got a chocolate bar in their pocket all the time. What happens when people stop
and
drinking?
And they say it's because my metabolism slowed down.
Yeah.
No, it's because your mouth opens.
It's because
too much.
Your mouth is full of sugar.
That's right.
What happens when you go to an alcoholic treatment center or a drug treatment center? They substitute sugar for the addictive substance. I mean, they're loaded with sugars everywhere.
So there's drinks
and everything else, because the sugar helps calm down that withdrawal feeling, that stressful feeling. It increases their happy juices in their brain, so to speak.
You know, it's amazing to me that, you know, we see patients on a day-to-day basis who have all kinds of health problems, from immunological problems to chronic pain that just never goes away. And half of them, actually more of them, come in with body fat and weight that they shouldn't have. And sometimes, you know, we go to the example of a skinny fat person, you know, where they have tons of fat that's accumulated inside, mm-hmm. and that's just their pattern. The point of it is that they're putting the weight on that they don't need, and they're burning up their own muscle patterns, which are amino acid dense foods that they need to have, or tissue that they need to have.
Right.
I want to get into that a little bit more, and we're going to talk about this ghrelin connection and what that does to the body, leptin, and how they're supposed to be balancing out, but because of the way that we're eating, it's not doing it. We're coming up to a break. Don't go away. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on 105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. I am in studio, 888-630-9625, 888-630-9625. And sitting, fortunately, more than an arm's length away from me so she can't hit me, Sue Rozelle. She's in studio, too.
We're talking poor abuse thing.
I know. we're talking about way too fat, and our society is getting larger. But the problem is, seriously, is that it's causing a tremendous amount of health degradation. People are becoming
diabetic. And it's becoming worldwide now.
It is. And we said earlier, seriously, our fast food industry has succeeded in expanding globally, but it's also succeeded in making people far heavier and fatter than they used to. And it used to be that you rarely, I mean, it was a very small percentage of the population that had excessive weight on them. But today, it's over the top. It's across the board.
You know, and the thing that's interesting to me is they keep trying to handle this at the individual's level. By, like in New York, when they wanted to put the sugar drink tax on soft drinks and sodas and things like that. To tax the consumers so they wouldn't consume as much. What happened to going after the companies that are putting this stuff out in the first place?
Well,
they know darn well what they're doing. They hire people who are experts at creating addictive forms of foods.
And we're going to talk about fructose, and we're going to talk about the artificial sweeteners as the show goes on. People are going to say, what? I can't do that?
Uh-huh.
Pay attention. Alice, thank you for being extremely patient. How can I help you?
Yeah, sorry to change the subject, but
well,
actually I did go on a paleo diet and lost 35 pounds, and so it's really good to go, you know, cut out the fats. I'm not the fat, the sugar, and add good fats.
Yay, good job.
Anyway, my question is about, I'm 63, and when I was born with a subluxated hip, which is, you know, where the hip ball is it's dislocated.
It's not sitting where it's supposed to be, right.
Yeah, so it's out and it's over. And so about 5 years ago, I had my hip x-ray because I was having a lot of pain. And they said, well, you know, you've got a subluxated hip and this is what it is. And so the it doesn't support, you know, my weight very well on the hip. So I've been working out and trying to, you know, improve the muscles in my hip and my core.
So what's the question, Alice?
So my question is, I'm having a lot of pain now. And I was told that maybe at some point I might need a hip replacement.
Okay.
Do you think that's something that would be a good idea for this kind of situation?
Alice, well, without seeing, you know, your x-rays, first of all, once you're cut. And when you do hip replacement surgery, knee replacement surgery, there's nerves that get nicked and there's muscles that get cut and so forth. And it's never the same because some of the muscles have to be restapled or repositioned into the new prosthesis. So, you know, a lot of the genetic subluxation patterns of the hip are simply because of the fact that the hip socket, the cup, is too shallow. And over a period of time, it begins to move around. And, you know, you bring, even when you're feeling good, you bring your knee up to your chest and you straighten it out and you hear this clunking and popping sound and so forth. And over time, you can have wear and tear. So the best thing to do, obviously, in my opinion, is to avoid surgery as long as you can, as long as the pain is not something that is life-changing. So that means that you really have to do a lot of strengthening and core training, but very specifically of those areas, sometimes wearing a very specific type of orthotic. If you're wearing heels of any sort, it's going to make it much worse because it's going to force your hip forward and more out of the hip socket. So those are the things that, you know, unfortunately our fashion industry wants to convince every woman on the planet, you know, to wear that type of heel. And it doesn't do any good for their low back or for their hips. And then the nerves, wherever they're going, are going to be much worse. So exercise, making sure that your hips are balanced structurally, you know, seeing somebody that does the work that I do, and acupuncture, and, you know, that will control making sure your weight is down. You've done a good job of dropping that. If you have some more weight to drop, get it off. There are, depending if the joint space has not completely degenerated, then you want to use things that will decrease the inflammatory reaction within the hip. And again, that's individualistic. If you're taking any kind of NSAID, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, that ultimately will make it worse because it breaks the hip down. It decreases the inflammation locally, but what happens, it blocks the absorption of sulfate ion. Sulfate is what repairs joints. And when you break it down, whether it's aspirin or whether it's Advil or whether it's Motrin or whether it's Celebrex, that's an NSAID, and it's competing for the receptors within the joint space, and it's going to cause things to become much worse. So you need to have somebody, you know, look at your overall metabolic pattern. You need to really look at that x-ray. So telling you to have surgery would be totally malpractice on my part at this point without knowing far more about you. I would need to see what muscles are firing, what aren't firing. Is there anything that you can be done from a natural conservative point of view? My guess is yes. But I don't know that without knowing much more. Alice, I hope that helps a little bit, but just don't jump into into surgery without exploring that. And you want to look at the metabolic pathways as well that are surrounding that. But anyway, good job in losing the weight, but you have a few more things that you need to explore. 888-630-9625. That's 888-630-9625. Sue, let's get into this stress eating pattern and talk about the ghrelin and, you know, leptin patterns. You know, that's a big... the big buzzwords, right?
Well, they're the imbalances of two of the major hormones that regulate our hunger versus satiety factors. The ghrelin makes us hungry. The leptin tells us we've had enough to eat. Along with that, the leptin involves one of the neurotransmitters called dopamine, which was one of the ones that I call a happy juice. When your dopamine levels are great and they're up at a good level, you really do have control over what you put into your mouth. And you're not constantly in that state of search for something to make you feel better because you already have the internal chemicals that do that. And the leptin then can send the message when you've eaten something that you're body is full and you don't need any more, and it's the shutoff valve.
Well, there's a catch 22 here too, because we talked about, you know, the way we're eating right now is increasing the risk exponentially of diabetes in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so subsequently insulin is a hormone that upregulates leptin. And so
yes.
If your pancreas is producing enough insulin.
And it's working.
And it's working the way it's supposed to actually get it into what we call the receptor sites. That's lock and key type of thing.
Right.
So when we say receptor sites, you know, what we're talking about is something going into a target and turning a switch to make something work. This leptin now is not being produced in people who are getting into blood sugar handling problems because the insulin levels are not what they should be.
Right.
So they're either crashing, you know, early on, giving you a hypoglycemic pattern. Still, the insulin's not there. So now you want to eat more. So when you eat more, you know, now your insulin's got to go to work, and pretty soon it shuts down and your inflammation. So you have this whole matrix that's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Well, and then you have the one other aspect that we were just talking earlier about, and the fact that, yes, you can eat the what we call the whole foods that will suffice to give you the calories, but they don't activate the reward centers. And when you're stressed, when you're hungry, when you're looking for something to make you feel better, you're going to go for things that are going to raise up that reward level. And those are the things that the, you know, the ice cream and the French fries and the desserts and everything. I mean, those are the things that people are going to go for. I've never had a single person tell me they binge on broccoli. It just doesn't happen. However, ice cream, whole different story.
Yeah. Why?
Because the broccoli is a natural food. It serves solely as a fuel, which is what food is supposed to be.
You can put a little garlic and olive oil.
But still, it's not going to hit the reward centers the same as a chocolate cake. All right. Which is going to make you feel better when you're stressed? Some broccoli or a chocolate cake? And most people are going to say chocolate cake.
I'll take a piece of Paul Newman's organic chocolate.
Yeah, I know. So the point here is you've got a hormonal imbalance, you've got a neurotransmitter depletion because of the amount of stress that we're constantly under. We're not getting sleep, we're not getting exercise, we're not relaxing and having fun. People are go, go, go. Everybody's got schedules up to the max of every moment of their waking hour. And they're trying to find some quick fix to make them feel better.
So, Sue, here's a question, and there's a lot of people out there that I was kidding around a minute ago, but I like chocolate, and it's dark organic chocolate is all that I put in my body because milk chocolate causes a lot of inflammatory reaction.
Sure.
And people out there say, oh, I can't have my milk chocolate anymore.
Too much chocolate, too much sugar.
But here's the question. So, my patient said, well, don't you eat anything that's sweet? And I said, on a very rare occasion, what I do like is a little bit of chocolate, but I'll eat maybe one or two squares and I'm done. Or maybe, on a bad night, I might eat three, but I don't do it every night. I do it on an occasion. I haven't had anything at the house now for I can't remember how long. So why is it?
Yeah, Easter Bunny didn't come.
No, it didn't. No, he got killed out in the lawn before he came into the house. So, yeah, I'm going to get that dog.
You are so bad.
Seriously, why can I not crave sugars at all? And I can, if I feel like a little piece of chocolate, I have a cup of tea and I'm reading at nightime and I have a little bit and that's it. And it's like, I'm done. I don't need any more. And somebody else will eat three of those chocolate bars.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think also it depends on the behavioral connection. If we fast backwards 45 years, that might have been a different story for you. But over the period of time, you have learned to use food from a more appropriate approach, which is supply you with nutrients, supply you with the things that are going to make you stay well and be healthy and be energetic and make your brain clear. And so you have developed the behavioral management of highly palatable foods.
So you mean I was able to overcome the night with the guys in college where the
exactly.
next morning I wanted a full quart of chocolate milk.
Chocolate milk, yeah. When was the last time you had chocolate milk?
45 years ago.
So there you go.
47 years ago.
There you go. So in other words, this isn't something that can't be overcome, but it means that you have to be really devoted to the concept that you need to make some changes. And I think it's important too that people understand it's not all on them. I really do have to make that point because people work hard to lose weight. They really do.
They do.
I have hundreds of people that I have seen
with about an 8% success level.
Well, they struggle. They honest to Pete do everything they're supposed to be doing, and it's just a terrible, terrible challenge for them.
So why? Why can't
because
people keep the weight off?
On every corner, every time you watch TV, every time you open a magazine, every time you open the newspaper, you're constantly being reminded of the food you cannot eat, and that increases your stress.
So you have to somehow rearrange and re-anchor the meaning.
It's a behavioral change like anything else.
Because you put stuff in front of me and I look at it like, oh my God, if I eat it, I'm going to die. But that's what my brain does to me.
Because you've trained it. Think about how you grew up and what you ate as a kid.
Oh, I'd had my third heart attack by now if I ate
Absolutely.
The same way as I was a kid.
So would I. I grew up on Southern food. I love Southern food. If I eat Southern food now, I won't sleep for a whole night. I would be so uncomfortable and unhappy and feeling terrible.
Let's talk about fructose, okay?
Yeah.
And, it's
you
like
mean high fructose.
High fructose corn syrup,
yeah.
Not the stuff that's in fruit, although if you overdo that, you got a problem too. But why the companies that are manufacturing stuff know that it's an addictive substance, and they do it on purpose.
Well, the high fructose especially, but fructose got to be famous because of the fact that it did not activate the glucose and insulin connection. It was not processed the same way as sugar. So they thought, oh my gosh, here's this perfect thing that we can use for diabetics and for people who have blood sugar management problems because it doesn't activate the insulin glucose regulation. It is processed completely through the liver. The problem is that the liver has so many other things to do, it gets overwhelmed, and pretty soon you have fatty deposits in the liver. That's called non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver. It's the number one reason we need liver transplants.
Add that to Tylenol, and you're really good shape.
Yeah. So I mean, it, and agave syrup is just as bad, and everybody's touting how wonderful it is. No, it's not. It's expensive high fructose corn syrup because it activates that same pattern. And so those were not good things either. And it's, you know, it comes back down to the fact that every time we start messing with Mother Nature, we get ourselves into trouble. Whether it's an artificial sweetener, supposedly it's not supposed to cause us to gain weight, but yet they have study after study after study that says the more artificial sugars you eat, the more weight you gain around your midsection.
Well, here's the deal also, and I've seen it repetitively over decades of practice, and particularly now with patients who have degenerative type of diseases of MS and Parkinson's and so forth, when the brain interprets something as being sweet. It doesn't make any difference whether it's real sweet or artificial sweet or combinations of sweet. If it's sweet to the taste buds, it acts the same way. It triggers the pancreas, the receptors within the body, the inflammatory levels go up. I have patients who have come in who have had multiple sclerosis, MS, and one of the common factors with them is
diet sodas.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't make that shift and take care of that, there's nothing you can do to fight the problem.
Right.
If you go to the Ageless Health movie that PBS did on us about 3-4 years ago, there was a young lady that was in that who had MS and was rapidly advancing, had gone from 4 lesions, 1 demyelinating, to 24 lesions in 2 months.
Right.
Common piece. There were several things with her, but one was the fact that she was a big soda drinker.
Yeah.
And today she's off of everything. She hasn't had a flare-up. She's doing great. We're coming up to a break and that time of the program where we'll try to take another call or two. But you know what? This is an important subject. We're playing with it. We're kidding with it. But pay attention. We'll be right back.
105.9 FM and AM 630 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozell here. You've been listening to Dr. Tom Rozell Live in the Tom and Sue Comedy Hour. We're here every Sunday at 12 noon. Same time, same place, Eastern Seaboard. If you're on the West Coast listening, you do the math. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Malcolm, how can I help you, sir? Thank you for being patient.
Appreciate you taking my call. I've got two things I'd like to discuss. Our brother has an extreme weight problem. He weighs 365, and I've been trying to guide him to, you know, get on a program to reduce that. And I personally have two knee joints that are just about gone, and I've had my knees x-rayed, and apparently they're telling me I'm bone to bone. And I do have pain in my knees. I mean, quite severe at times. I just want to try to get some, you know, maybe some foods that you would recommend that I would eat to maybe see if we can keep from having that knee replacement thing done.
Okay, well, two different questions, Malcolm, and the procedures. When you look at anybody that has degenerative joint problems of any sort, whether it's a shoulder, whether it's a spinal segment, whether it's knees, whether it's a hip, you have to look at a lot of different things. First, you look at structures. Is the structural alignment of the body normal? Are there areas of spinal deviation? You take a look at those. If those aren't corrected, it doesn't make any difference. It's like wear and tear. If you got a building that's out of alignment, the building's going to break down until you get it back in its normal position. Biochemically, you have to make sure there are things that are not inflammatory. There are things generally broad-based that you stay away from. Sugars and anybody who has degenerative joint disease are going to be far worse of a problem than for anybody else. Any of the artificial things we were talking about. You have to make sure you increase your water intake significantly, making sure that, you know, at least, you know, about half of your body weight in ounces on a day-to-day basis and flush it out. Get rid of the sodas and coffee and things like that because they will cause the system to dehydrate and break things down even further. You want to increase the vegetables. Tons of alkaline foods in your body. The more colorful, the better. So, and we can go on with this, but that's where you start. You get rid of the sugar, sodas, coffee, black teas, fast food, fried foods, alcohol, gluten, additives, preservatives, all the GMO products, that kind of stuff. And, you know, hopefully that'll help you. You know, you can give us a call at Rozell Center for Healing or go to the website, send us a note, try to get a little bit more information to you. But, you know, give us a call and get in. Sue, you got about a minute or so. Actually, got about a minute or so.
Well, one of the things, you know, this whole thing was all about is the fact that our brains are very plastic, and they can still change no matter where you are in your life cycle. And your brain gets to a place that it is because of behaviors in the past. So behaviors in the future can change that brain in a different way. There's some things you need to remember to do. I mean, let's not cause your body to have to constantly use its willpower, because as the day goes on and the fatigue factor increases, your willpower becomes won't power. But you need to get enough sleep. You need to get some exercise. You need to make sure that you don't have the foods around that you're going to have a war with. If Oreos call to you, if they're in the freezer at the bottom, but you know they're there and you're going to go dig them out at 11 o'clock at night, don't have Oreos in the house. That's just the bottom line.
Clean the house, like when you're going to quit smoking, get rid of the ashtrays.
Exactly. Don't let yourself go to places where you're going to get into trouble. I mean, if you're trying to get off of junk food, don't drive through McDonald's or any other place that's like that. You know, it's just some simple things. And then learn to begin to use other things to reward yourself besides food. Unfortunately, our society didn't help you with that, and it started from the time you were an infant. But it doesn't mean you have to perpetuate it as an adult. And over time, and it's not a quick fix, it's not like anything else, over time it can be changed and reversed.
Habits can be changed, and you know, we go to brain being very plastic, the nervous system is plastic, but it's very susceptible to its environment. So choose your environment, choose the way you run your brain, and you can get over this.
You'll get a different result.
And you get a different result. Do something the same way, you get the same old, same old. We're coming up to the break. We'll be here next week, same place, same time, same old Tom Rozelle. Love you all. Bye.